90.7 WVASHD. Broadcasting from the campus of Alabama State University, Montgomery, Alabama.
The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of WVAS-FM or its licensee, Alabama State University. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers. Welcome to The Law and You, hosted by attorney LeBaron Boone of the Beasley Allen Law Firm. And now here's your host, LeBaron Boone.
Hello, world. Hello, Americans. Hello, Alabamians. Hello, Montgomeryans. This is your host, attorney LeBaron Boone, and my job is to serve you by keeping it legal. And I do it each week right here on WVAS 90.7 FM. And this week, I'm going to do it by having Dean Dennis, a native Ohioan who is one of the leading experts in the world on fire safety. I've talked about it with one of his friends, Adrian Butler, who mentioned Dean Dennis earlier. Dean Dennis is one of the leading experts in the world, and in particular in the United States. Adrian Butler is one of the leading experts in Australia. Therefore, this is a worldwide show. And guess what? You won't believe right here on WVAS 97 FM that we attract worldwide leading expert. Adrian Butler, by tracking the latest in fire safety and history, has also called in today, and we might not be able to get him on, but we will definitely try to get him on. But this show is about safety. And I am so happy to be back. I had a huge trial that would affect safety, not just nationwide, but worldwide going on. And now I get back and I'm fired up and I want to talk to you all about safety and the issues I've learned about. If you want to join and talk to us about any safety issues, BPR spill, the Toyota sudden acceleration litigation that led to the largest governmental fine of a manufacturer ever, GM's recall and alleged fraud hiding a defect that everybody, and internally it appears from everybody involved, knew that it was a defect that would cause serious injury and death, nevertheless allowed people to continue to die. And that's going on right now. So that's why this show, and I'm excited to come back from grinding, trying to fight for the least of these. I'm here to talk about what I do. And that's why this show is going to focus about the world, fighting to make this world a safer place, talking to people who are committed to making safety priority one for the world, citizens of the world, and in particular, citizens of America. I want you to know we all can make a difference on educating a child, changing a child's life, making safety important in one's life. Each of us in our own sphere, bringing Christ to a child. But each and every one of us has a duty to make the world different, to make the world better, to make the world a better place before we leave. And each and every one of us can do that if we simply educate ourselves. I don't mean a PhD. I mean just understand what's going around in the world and what issues are out there. Reading, thinking, and not taking the advice of just what you see on the TV. At the very least, each of us, no matter what our education level is, ought to ensure and demand that our children become educated. Our families are broken and our children are suffering. Without a dad, with a broken family, our children and education is on the decline in this community. We need to educate ourselves so we can make a difference. We all should strive also to make the world a better place, a safer place. We all must vote. We all must get informed. We all must get involved. Get involved in the political process and make sure our voices are being heard. I do it by representing the least of these. I do it by standing up against corporations, like I said, BP and the oil spill in the Gulf. Firestone, that was the largest tire safety recall in the history of my understanding of the world. No doubt the United States. Of tires that were detreading on the road, in particular, a high number of detreads on Ford Explorers causing the vehicles to roll over and people to be seriously injured and killed, led to the largest safety tire recall ever. While the manufacturer admitted the product had a defect, the tires were defective and sought to recall them. As you know, we're involved in the Toyota Sudden Acceleration litigation nationwide and got the first verdict in the world on claiming that alleged that the product was defective because of its electronics. We're leading the class action with GM. And I've already filed cases for a lady right here in Alabama whose vehicle stalled when the engine cut off and the airbag would not work. That defect has affected a few million vehicles. A few million. What I'm going to talk to you about today has affected hundreds of millions of citizens all around the world. But what I want to do is step back quickly and just let you know my part is no more or no less important as yours. Just because your platform is different than mine's, you have a voice. Your voice can affect that one child, that one citizen that ultimately impacts the world. That Gandhi, that Martin Luther King, that Barack Obama, that President Clinton, that John F. Kennedy, that Ronald Reagan, whoever is your hero and whoever you believe stands for your proposition. But each of us can be the one stone that causes a ripple and causes a tidal wave to change the world, no matter what your area is. So we all have to be involved. And now let me talk to you about Dean Dennis and specifically what we're going to talk about today. It is reports all over the world that thousands of people have died because unnecessarily in fires around the world because of defective smoke alarms. All new homes in, I believe, every state in America now requires smoke alarms in a new home or an apartment complex or in a dorm room or any rental facility. That means hundreds of millions of homes. 90% of all homes in the world have what we have called an ionization smoke detector. There are two types, photoelectric and ionization smoke detectors. Ionization smoke detectors, essentially being simplistic, detect ions. They don't see smoke. They don't detect fire. They detect ions that are created from combustion. Photoelectric picks up light. It sees essentially smoke. But 90% of all alarms are ionization alarms. Means hundreds of millions of detectors in the homes around this country are of that type. The manufacturers in the fine print that they never tell you and I about have noted that these ionization detectors will not detect as fast as a photoelectric slow smoldering fire. The question is, well, why would you sell them? You can't plan what kind of fire you're going to have. You can't tell it to be a fast flaming fire. You can't tell it to not be an electrical fire or an electrical short or a malfunction of a appliance that ultimately short smolders and turns into fire. And in fact, most fires are that type of fire, a slow smoldering fire that causes death in America. But nevertheless, this alarm in the fine print says it won't even protect that, detect that type of fire as well as a photoelectric. So the question is, why don't the public know? Why they sell a device that they know have serious limitations? And in particular, the limitation arises in situations that's going to most likely cause death. Well, one person amongst a mighty forming army by the name of Dean Dennis sought to figure out what is the problem and what the problem is and why. And it started in a very unique way. This gentleman was a teacher dedicating his time to disadvantaged kids with disability, and he learned about it. Well, he experienced a tragic loss. And I'll let him talk about that tragic loss. So I'm going to see if I can get him on the line. He's from Ohio, and he's fought to pass laws that make it safer all over America and all over the world, and particularly pass laws in Ohio, worked with a gentleman by the name of Russ Ash in Ohio. So I'm going to see now if Dean Dennis, one of the world's leading fire experts, is on the line with me so we can talk and he can educate you and tell you about what he's found. Dean, are you there today?
I'm there, LeBaron. How's my good friend doing?
Hey, thank you. It is a pleasure. I'm going to tell you all something. Not only this man has a passion for the safety of others, he's donated thousands and thousands of hours researching this issue, looking into the problem, and has done it free of charge. He's just dedicated his life to it. And you'll hear a little bit about why he would do that. I was concerned and interested in why would you dedicate your life to make a difference in others who you don't know, live in other states. But he's opened his home up to me. I've actually stayed with him at his home, had never seen me before other than he knew, like me, I had a passion to make the world safer and a better place. And we formed a bond that I believe can't be broken forever. And if he's ever here, he has a place to stay and he has a warm bed, food, or anything else he needs as long as he's here. And I actually feel, without him having to say it, I believe I have the same offer extended if I was in Ohio. But I want to get to him because these shows end up running fast. But Dean, I've laid an introduction about smoke alarms and how there may be how there is a defect and how most people don't even understand the technology and what it's about. So I wanted to introduce you a little bit and in fact, let you introduce yourself a little more. But just kind of tell us how this school teacher, what happened in your life to change everything for you to get you interested in this, this technology, this safety issue that has now started to make a safety difference around the world?
Thanks, LeBaron. Well, tragically, we lost Andrea 11 years ago in a fire. She was a student, and she went to some off-campus housing with some friends, and there was a late-night fire, and we lost her 4 in the morning on Palm Sunday 11 years ago. And coincidentally, 2 years later on Palm Sunday, at 4 in the morning, there was another Ohio fire, this time at Miami University. We lost Andrea at the Ohio State fire, but at the Miami University fire in Oxford, Ohio, 3 more students lost their lives. So between those 2 fires, there were 8 students that perished, and between the 2 off-campus houses, there were more than 20 ionization smoke alarms that did not activate or activate in time. The save those lives. And
to stop you real quick, and I'm going to let you continue on, but I wanted the ladies and gentlemen know when you said you lost Andrew, and this is a gentleman, and to be more clear, because I know your stories, but that's his daughter. His daughter, he raised a beautiful young woman, excellent student, and very involved in curricular activities who he had just sent off to college, and obviously his daughter died in that tragic fire. Well, tell us, from those 2 fires, what did you do thereafter, and what did you learn?
Well, strangely, a Boston fire chief by the name of Jay Fleming reached out who had studies fires, and he made the comment that if we knew the difference, and I say we, Doug Turnbull, Julie Turnbull's dad, who died in the Miami fire, that if we knew the difference between ionization of photoelectric smoke alarms, likely our daughters would be alive today, and so that was kind of a strong statement, and so we started researching it, and I believe 100% that he's correct. I was just absolutely startled from the research that when you study the differences between ionization technology and photoelectric technology, which you eloquently explained that there's 2 types of smoke alarm technology, that the technology, ionization technology, that's in over 90% of our homes, as you stated, will not protect you. I mean, you actually have a significant chance of dying in a fire because they actually do not detect smoke. It's kind of counterintuitive that a smoke alarm would not detect smoke, but when these things were invented and marketed and came to the United States 40-plus years ago, they actually were not even called smoke alarms. They were called products of combustion because they detected hot, small particles. And the problem with that is fires have stages. People often try to frame them as smoldering fires or flaming fires, but fires have a stage, and there's always that smoldering stage first, and that smoldering stage throws off smoke. The ionization alarms have trouble detecting it. As a matter of fact, they really do not detect smoke very well. They might detect hot particles in the smoke, but as smoke cools, the particles become larger and ionizations become very ineffective. There's been a study. Studies have been done on this. Texas A&M studied this for more than 2.5 years, and they concluded that if you have an ionization smoke alarm in your house and you have a late night fire and it has any type of an extended smoldering stage, you only have a 44% chance of survival. Whereas if you have a photoelectric smoke alarm in your home, you have a 96% chance of survival. So actually, I fault two of our main agencies. One is Underwriter Laboratories, who has not changed their testing in 30 to 40 years. And they know definitively that these types of alarms have problems. And I blame the Consumer Product Safety Commission because they've been approached numerous times, and they're always studying the issue, but they never react and take any action. As far back as 2008, our Secretary of State, who was former Senator John Kerry, approached the Consumer Product Safety Commission on the advice of Jay Fleming, who informed us about the defects of ionization smoke alarms. He wrote a letter to the Consumer Product Safety Commission. It was ignored. I wrote a letter in August of 2008 to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and they sent me the same letter back that they're actively studying the issue. Well, they haven't done anything about it. Just recently, my state senator, my U.S. senator, Senator Rob Portman, sent the Consumer Product Safety Commission a letter, and they gave him what equates to a Dear John letter that we're looking into it. This was followed up by my congressman, Brad Wenstrup, who also sent a letter to the Consumer Product Safety Commission, and they basically gave him the same return letter back that they gave me now going on 6 years ago. So it's an agency that's supposed to be representing and protecting us with our taxpayer money, and frankly, they're dragging their feet. And because of that, we're losing 500 to 1,000 people needlessly each year due to preventable fire deaths because of ionization smoke alarms.
Let's talk a little bit more about the technology, because that it just shocked me when I talked to you. And it was obvious in the case I was involved in, that the alarm failed. Many people testified. Hey, it was no flames, lots of smoke. No flames, lots of smoke. And it wasn't going off. I went in, I couldn't see. I went in, couldn't see. It was so black, I couldn't see a foot in front of me. I didn't know where to go. I was choking on the smoke, so I came back out. But there was no flames, but it never went off. So multiple people, as many as five or six people, include went in who are not just the people who were involved who might make up a story, but firefighters, police officers, and neighbors all said, I'm sitting right there, went in, full of smoke, can't see a foot in front of you, and it didn't go off. And then I was trying to understand until I met you that my smoke detector, I didn't know whether it was a photoelectric or ionization until I checked, and as an ionization detector, and I found nobody other than very sophisticated people who would choose a photoelectric for some specific reason to ever have anything but an ionization. So from what I can see on average regular people, 100% of them are ionization, which is the defective brand. But what I want to ask is, a lot of people ask me is, my smoke alarm will go off when there's no fire, no smoke, just from opening the oven up while I'm broiling something. And talk to us about that. And that actually is kind of counterintuitive, but it's in fact kind of proves your point. It's picking up ions, and I want you to talk about it a little bit more in detail. Maybe you can explain it better than I tried to explain it to some individuals. Why to pick up no smoke, but in a room where you can't see 1 foot in front of you, where you're choked to death on the smoke, it won't go off at all.
Well, certainly, I'll try. It becomes a little technical, and you're right. It's so counterintuitive when people have the nuisance alarm problems all the time when there really isn't a life safety threat of toaster smoke or ionization around a toaster opening up an oven door. They will sound, and so when you tell people that they won't go off and smoke, they just don't believe it. But when you ionize air, they ionize air by this little radioactive material underneath one of their plates in the ionization smoke alarm. It's called americium 241. That's radioactive material, and that emits a tremendous amount of alpha particles. Now, these alpha particles ionize the air, and what that means is they knock off the electrons off our oxygen and nitrogen particles, and so the electrons go to a positive plate, and then the rest of the particle of the nitrogen and oxygen, which is now an ion, sinks and goes to the other plate, goes to the negative plate. And so you have a current that's flowing in there. And what triggers an ionization smoke alarm is a tremendous amount of small particles, microscopic particles, about one-third of a micron. There has to be a lot of them, and they need to be moving rapidly into that chamber to disrupt that activity. And when that happens, a signal drops and the alarm goes off. Now let's talk about smoke. Now when you smoke, when it leaves its source, it cools and it becomes larger. And so as smoke cools and becomes larger, you have visible particles and they become fewer when they enter the chamber. Now the only way an ionization will sound if it's very close to a very hot source. And so when you open up an oven door, you're releasing a lot of heat. You look at the volume of an oven, and I'll think about all that heat that's trapped in that oven. You open up that oven door, all those small, invisible, submicron particles rush out of there along with cooking arsenals, and an ionization, if it's close enough, will react to that. However, if you actually have a fire downstairs and you're in your bedroom upstairs, as that smoke travels on up, it's cool and it's a very large particle. An ionization, a smoke alarm, there's not enough particles and they're too big to disrupt that current flow.
Yes.
And conversely, a photoelectric likes it because it's using a beam of light, and that beam of light refracts the light to a sensor and it triggers. So photoelectric really goes off on the type of materials that would burn in your house, like, for instance, wood polyurethanes. Those emit particles that are larger than a micron, sometimes as big as 4, 5, 8 micron size. Now think about this. A ionization is only good at detecting a third of a micron up to a micron. So in your home, the materials that are in your home that can harm you in a fire are all, for the most part, larger than what an ionization can detect. Now, eventually, when enough smoke builds up and enough gases build up, you'll have a flashover in your home. And that flashover emits a lot of hot, small particles, and then the ionization alarm will trigger.
That's unbelievable.
And by then, you're dead.
That's unbelievable to me. And that's what you explained to me. And I was like, I know something went wrong. How and what? You explained that to me. So I want to break it down into a more simplistic thing. You gave me an example that, and you can tell them where they could find this at. And I also realized we might try to figure out a way to cut and let Adrian introduce himself again before we end, if you don't mind. But you told me.
No, I spoke to my good friend from Australia, who's the founder of the World Fire Safety Foundation, and your listeners need to know that Adrian's just an incredible person who's just dedicated his life to this. When I was searching and doing all my research, we discovered each other, and we've since become friends, and we talk weekly on the phone about fire safety all over the world. And I talked to Adrian, and I had asked him if he would join us. So anytime you want to introduce Adrian LeBaron, that's certainly more than fine with me.
Well, why don't you tell me this here, though, this simple example, so people who listen to this, some of it's complex, would say, I just don't know. My mind's going off from when I see no smoke. I just can't believe it wouldn't go off in a room completely full of smoke. I'm talking about thick smoke and you can't see a foot in front of you. Tell them about the aquarium test that you've done for a TV station and where, if these listeners wanted to see an actual proof that you can have put a smoke alarm in an aquarium, very sealed, and it could be completely smoke-filled and it won't go off. Tell us about that test, number one, because I understand you ran it for a television station to prove this, which you was telling me that nobody believed until y'all showed them. And two, where maybe the listeners can go and find that video if they're really concerned about, really, is my smoke alarm an ionization? And two, is that true?
Well, it's timely that you mentioned Adrian Butler. I'm going to give you the best source of where to go see a shocking video. If your viewers go to YouTube and look for and type in Bob Siegel, aquarium test, they will see where aquarium gets filled with smoke to the point that the CO, the carbon monoxide detector near, maxes out at 999, which means you completely are dead. And the ionization smoke alarm is just sitting in that aquarium, that to the point you can't even see it, and the alarm's not sounding. That news station actually went and talked to the Consumer Product Safety Commission and said, why is this? And they could not explain it. But the inventor, or the person that conceived the idea to give the visual to the public, is Adrian Butler from the World Fire Safety Foundation. So this would be an opportune time to bring in Adrian.
I want to tell one more thing in case I don't know if how the guy hadn't given me the signal whether I'm going to lose you or not. But no, let me talk with you one more question. I'm not sure if I'm going to have to get I'll lose you. But tell ladies and gentlemen about not only you, one of the world's most renowned experts in this area, what type of changes from your work, Adrian Butler, Russell Ash, and all of these are friends of yours, and I've kind of let y'all kind of adopt me into that club because you've had me at your home. But tell us about some of the results and now the law changes, like what happened with Russell Ash, a firefighter who actually was involved in a fire and learned the same thing you all did and have communicated with you. Some of the state laws that have changed and some of the municipalities or cities and counties that are passing laws about this. And maybe you can throw in before we, because our time is just about up, but and maybe you can throw in some of the organizations like the firefighters, the International Firefighter Associations, and their stance on whether or not ionization is sufficient and whether you ought to have something else. If you can kind of give me a kind of summary of what changes are going around the country.
Certainly. Briefly, you mentioned the International Association of Firefighters. Those are the gentlemen that go in and rescue us. It's over 300,000 of them. They only endorse photoelectric smoke alarms. That's important to note. As far as changes, there's some states that have put in their statutes and changed them. Vermont is totally a photoelectric state. Massachusetts requires photoelectric technology. Matter of fact, the city of Boston had the biggest jump on the rest of the United States. And they only average one fire death per year, and that's a city of 650,000 people. Just go down the coast of Baltimore that only has 600,000 people, and they're averaging 15 fire deaths a year. So that's the difference between photoelectric and ionization technology. Here in Ohio, we have 9 municipalities that have changed their ordinance to require photoelectric smoke detectors, including my city, the city of Cincinnati. And actually, if I can share, Good Morning America is going up to northeastern Ohio with some of my friends, the NEOFPA, the Northeastern Ohio Fire Prevention Association, who has an excellent website called Photoelectric Saves. So if you want to Google Photoelectric Saves, it has a lot of information on this. And also definitely go to the World Fire Safety Foundation on a website in Australia, and there's hundreds of pages on this topic.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you want to, I think Adrian is on the line, and that's one of your best friends in the world. Do you mind if we try to get him on so he won't miss the whole show? Because we only have about a minute left just to introduce himself, and he probably won't even have the talk, but we'll love to at least have him on and let him know the people involved in this fight. Do you mind us doing that?
You absolutely have to get Adrian on.
Let's try to get Adrian on if you can. My superb program manager who makes this show run excellent and smoothly. I think I hear him. Is this Adrian Butler on the line?
Yeah, hi, LeBaron. How are you?
Adrian Butler, I call him the Raf Nader of Australia or the world. Raf Nader's in America. You're in Australia. You are the World Fire Safety Foundation. Why don't you just maybe tell us, remind us who you are, and we only got about a minute, but if you've heard any of the show, Dean Dennis has been talking and just bragging about you and the work you've done along with him. If you can just kind of give us a short summary. We don't want to miss you, but we only have about a minute left.
Sure. Well, look, just to let you know what we've been doing with Dean in Ohio, and in fact, because Dean got legislation passed through in the city of Cincinnati. Now, right next to Cincinnati is Indianapolis, and we're going to be writing to John Kasich, who's the governor of Ohio, and asking him if he can please write to BRK, the world's largest manufacturer, and ask them what level of smoke their BRK SA340 ionization smoke alarm activated under the Australian standards testing. Because we have documented scientific evidence from our government organisation, the CSIRO, here in Australia, that proves that the UL testing of smoke alarms in America. It's not safe. It's flawed, which is why they are in the process of being sued, and that the smoke alarms in every home in the U.S., I'm talking the ionization ones, and well over 90% of homes aren't safe. And they're trying to push legislation through in Indianapolis right now, the 10-year battery smoke alarms, which is a really, really bad idea because it's not specific to the type of alarm. They know the ionization alarms aren't safe, but no one wants to admit it. And this is thanks to the work that Dean Dennis has done in Ohio, and, of course, Cincinnati is right next to Indianapolis, so just across the border, which is in Indiana.
Well, Adrian, you are such a renowned guy. We had to at least give you a minute, but my program manager is telling me I'm just about got to wrap it up. That means we have to come back again, so y'all get a chance to hang out with me more and talk about this. But I can tell you all, ladies and gentlemen, as I end, I have learned something that shocks me to the core. Just what they said is true. Hundreds of millions, not like the GM recall and Toyota recall that affected 1 million, 2 million cars, but hundreds of millions of our citizens are facing a defective product, potentially in certain type of fires that could cause serious injury and deaths, and many have said has caused tens of thousands of deaths around the world, and nobody knows. And the documents he talked about, I am the first lawyer in the history of this country, or maybe in the world, to ever see those documents. It was of another manufacturer, but those documents reveal just what he said. These things will not go off with a room full of smoke. And I'm the only lawyer, and we learned this, the first law firm anywhere in the world, with these gentlemen's help. We were able to get this information and learn that these products, not maybe defective, in certain circumstances, they will not work, in my opinion. And therefore, hundreds of millions of people are at risk every day. The only thing they were playing is Russian roulette and hope that type of fire don't occur. If it does, you have a potential to be seriously injured or killed. Hey, my time is gone. I hate I ran over, but this is so important and affects so many people that I had to serve you and keep talking too much today. But, hey, I'm going to come back next week. I'll continue serving you legal. But until next week, I'll just have to serve you legal then.
You have been listening to The Law and You with attorney LeBaron Boone of the Beasley Allen Law Firm. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WVASFM or Alabama State University.